26. We knew it this time. We wrote it down. Episode 26 of Sass Effect.
I actually thought it was 27.
She did. It's true.
Get it wrong twice in a row.
But they wouldn't have known unless we said anything. But that's okay. I don't think they had that much confidence in us anyway. Hi, I'm Tegan.
And I'm Lee.
And yeah, welcome. And we're actually recording in a bit of a special place today. One might even call it the new studio. Lee, do you want to introduce our very special guest today?
Our very special guest, who has never been on this show before.
Definitely not.
Is our producer, Rick Salter.
Hey.
Hi, Rick.
What show good is this again?
Good to have you on the show.
Where am I?
I've never been here before.
Thank you for letting us into your house.
Your
second house.
You just walked in.
That's true.
I don't think I technically let you in.
It was like, time to fucking record.
It's an insurgency.
Trying to figure out the doorbell puzzle.
Right.
Yeah, so we haven't had Rick on for a while. A bit of a reason for that, not just because we've got more famous friends. It took us a while to get desperate. Rick has been in the middle of some moving. Do you want to maybe tell the story of how we now kind of have a studio where we are, what's been going? We'll make this mate. Like, what have you been doing? Besides, you know, buying a
Monster Black
dollar house.
Well, yes. Okay. Well, thank you for telling all of our listeners exactly how much me, myself and my family paid for the house.
Lucky Generation X's.
Here we go.
More money than us millennials.
It begins.
Also, welcome to the podcast, right?
Yeah. So, we'd been looking for a new house for months and months and months, and we had looked in a whole bunch of different directions, but we had never looked south. And we looked south one week, and we found.
Why'd you do that, Rick?
We just did. It just came to me in a vision.
Oh no, it's too close to the Shire. Oh, can't live there.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't me just like, how about instead of Concord, lol, Rockdale?
I don't recall that ever happening. And my message history is deleted, so yeah.
Okay, great.
So basically, we looked south and we found this amazing house and just assumed that it would be way out of our price range because this kind of house that we're sitting in now in the inner west would be well over $2 million.
Yeah.
It'd be like nuts. So, yeah. So we discounted it initially, and then we found out that it actually probably was in our price range. And and that was the beginning of a very long saga.
Let's just piss off all of the listeners that are around Lee and my age a little bit more by divulging it's not actually a house.
No, it's two houses.
Yeah. So how does that work? So what are we sitting in now?
We're sitting in what I would call the residence, it's technically a granny flat, but it would be the kind of flat that granny would live in if she kind of,
This is bigger than my apartment. Like, this is sick.
It's a two bedroom, it's a sort of a two bedroom granny flat.
Yeah.
And it has like a bathroom and a kitchen and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And so when we saw that, so there's the house and then there's a yard and then there's the granny flat at the back. And fell in love.
Can you invent like a hoity-toity name for it and put like a name plaque on?
There's already one at the front.
Yeah, it's already called something.
You need one for this one.
It's the residence, isn't it?
That we call it the residence. Oh, this one is called the residence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I've even taught my kids to say it. So they say this like my
when they're
kids.
In primary school, yeah, like, yeah. The residence down
they
here.
Say this incredibly pretentious. It's in the residence sort of thing.
That's
I just didn't want it to be called the granny flat.
And then they're like, oh, don't mind them. They used to live in the inner west.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's kind of like the thing of like all those assholes coming in and like gentrifying the south.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. So after you initially said, well, welcome to the south, come and live south. Now you're saying, well, you're basically fucking up the south.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how we roll. Like literally a week after you moved in, I found like a place that I'd never seen before, which was like a raw vegan cafe had popped up, and I assumed it was your fault.
We don't want your milk spelt with a Y.
So obviously, considering that the types are like Lee and I will never be able to afford something like this, we decided, well, how do we get a cut of it? Oh, that's right, we'll just show up and decide. This is where we're going to record from now on.
Exactly. And so this is like the maiden voyage of Sass in the residence.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
We've got
fancy cheese and cider.
It's true.
Wank chips and
I love wank chips. That's a great time. I think there's a couple of stories around the residence though. Like there was a little bit of trouble, but I think my favorite one is because it involves me, is what happened on the day that you moved in?
On the day that we, I wasn't sure if you were like happy to divulge that one. So I'm glad that you are. Okay, so the day that we move in, it was a stressful day. We had, we should also make mention of the movers.
Oh, I love those movers.
Yeah, so there is a certain like company of movers, which are pretty much, I reckon they're like Argentinians that have been like brought here in a shipping container or something. And these guys, they work really hard and they're kind of, I don't know, how would you describe them? They are somewhat fit.
Oh my God, they're so hot.
And these guys, and it's so funny because they've also got that kind of, you know, slight Latin lover tilt to their speech and everything.
They make you feel dangerous, but also safe.
And so one of the things, while it was moving in, right, it was a boiling hot day. I don't know if you remember the day, but it was fucking hot.
Yeah.
And so they'd been moving, like, you know, the move is like they had to get everything from our old house into the truck and have a bunch of little arguments about whether they can technically put pot plants in a truck and all this sort of all this, you know, middle class bullshit. Then they move the truck over here. By that time, these guys are like sweltering because it's, you know, it's thirsty work. And so anyway, we get here.
Yeah, it is.
And then the guy just turns to me, and because my kids are running around and all that kind of stuff, they go, "Is it okay if I take off my shirt?" And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "It's very hot. Can I take off my shirt? It's okay?"
And your wife's like, "Yes."
Yeah, my wife is like pre-approved for the shirt removal. I'm like, "Why are you asking me, man?" But I think it was this kind of propriety thing.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
It was like, you know, like my kids might freak out when he saw, you know.
Yeah, this is what a man should look like.
If the Argentinian guns are released. Yeah, exactly. And my parents look at these guys and go, "Daddy, why don't you look like that?" I'm like, "I don't know, son. I've never looked like that." So that's not even the point of the story.
That was
an interesting aside.
I did use the same. So the reason I know about the Argentinians is because Rick recommended them to me when I moved about 4 or 5 months ago. And when they walked into my house, I'm just like, how do you exist in nature? Like, what is happening? But yeah, they were dead hot. That wasn't the point of the story.
No. So they'd moved everything in. We'd paid them. They went. And of course,
they were still there.
Huh?
When this happened.
Okay.
We're talking about me here.
Can't remember. All right. Anyway, so all's well. We've moved the kids in. We're settling down. I just sent my mum out to get some like chicken, like a roast chicken or something to feed the kids, right? While she's out, there's a knock at the door, and I'm like busy moving things around. I didn't get the door. My wife got the door. So Steph is like, what's going on? Like, what the fuck is going on? She's like, come to the front. I come to the front, and there's a pizza guy there. There's the Domino's guy. The Domino's guy was like handing over 4 like massive pizzas, and Steph has no idea what's going on, of course. Very quickly, I'm like doing the math in my head, and I go, okay, I fucking know what this is.
But I thought, like, Steph thought that maybe it was the Argentinians.
It might have been that, she didn't. She honestly had no idea what to think. She's just got like for the, and so I'm like, fucking Tegan did this. And so I just turned to Steph and I said, "This is Tegan. She did this. Don't worry about it." And the guy, the Domino's guy, goes, "It's important." And the reason why he was saying that was because there were instructions written on the delivery, which basically said, you know, like when you order from Domino's, you can say, "Are there any special delivery instructions?"
Yeah.
They give you like a little thing. And so it turns out that that Tegan had written,
"Welcome to the neighborhood, bitch."
This must say, "Welcome to the neighborhood, bitch. This is very important." And so that's what they'd written on the thing.
The entire thing.
And so the only thing the Domino's guy could say was, "It's important." And so we accepted the pizzas, which of course had been prepaid.
Yeah.
And it was magnificent. And then the kids had the pizzas, and there was drink as well.
Yeah.
And it was a terrific welcome to the neighborhood because there
it was had to be dank pizza. It's not going to be good pizza.
No, like, one of them was pretty.
Was it the value pizzas? As
oh
well?
Yeah, except for one. Like I got a special where you could get some of like the fancy ones. So I let them have one fancy one with camembert.
One was super classy. It was good. Yeah, it had the like camembert or blue cheese or something.
Yeah,
but yeah, so it was fantastic. It was like, yeah, it was all we needed that day. So
yeah,
it was brilliant.
So welcome to the neighborhood, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, what have you been up to? You what, mate?
Well, aside from like going off the grid and not telling Twitter about it,
which means you didn't really go off the grid.
Yeah, because like you haven't gone off the grid unless you've told like all your followers and friends and whatever. So my old house husband was in town for like 3 weeks.
Yay!
So I caught up with him a few times. So like many drinks were had. He was like very drunk a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So just like old times. Just been keeping at it with the fencing, and I'm getting better. Like I'm like I beat someone who's been doing fencing longer than I have.
Yes!
So I was like, yes!
Yes, queen!
It's like, there is improvement, so I'm pretty happy about that. I also been buying up plants.
Yes, good!
Because a friend of mine, she's like selling indoor plants now, so awesome. I bought like some really nice household plants with like some nice self-watering pots, so...
Yay!
And gardening up a storm, like tomatoes are growing like really yes. well. It's like first flowers came out at once. I'm like, yes, I'm gonna have tomatoes soon. And yeah, so mostly like pottering around the house and stuff, like boring people in couples do.
Yeah, you have nested like a mother bitch, haven't you?
Yeah.
Amazing. I have been in New Zealand recently, which was exciting. So Alex and I got away for a few days, for kind of our birthdays, because Alex turned 30, so we decided to go to Wellington. So it was fun. So besides doing like Lord of the Rings tour and stuff as you do, we just, yeah, it was cool. We stayed in this kind of like quirky B&B on top of a fucking hill, so we had to walk everywhere, so we lost heaps of weight. We just really liked the vibe there. Like, I think the way that I described it was if you take all the best bits of Newtown, so like, really artsy culture, like people are into theatre and all that sort of thing, but remove all of the pretentious wankery, you have Wellington. So yeah, like every corner there's like an actual live theatre, there's like street performing arts and stuff like that everywhere. Everyone's super chill. You know, we even just decided on a whim to go to a movie, went into a random movie theatre, and it's this weird like kind of cool 1920s art house style ones where like there's free Wi-Fi and free water and only about 30 people in the cinema on nice comfy couches and exposed brick everywhere, and it was awesome. And yeah, then even just when we flew in, we got in about midnight, you get off the plane, it's this super like small but super clean and beautiful airport, it smells like cinnamon donuts, there's like all these signs for like, hey, if you need an ambulance, it's free, and it's like free Wi-Fi around the entire city and stuff, and like holy shit, like it was pretty much like the best place to get away from Sydney, which was cool. The only thing that we kind of found was everywhere where like it was advertised on Google or people that we knew there were like, this is the best of this thing that you can eat here, like whether it's dumplings or Vietnamese or whatever. I think we were kind of Sydney wankers a little bit in that we're like, oh, was that the best?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've just been really spoiled here because we're just like, that was good, but okay. But anywhere that was recommended by like our good friend of the podcast, Katie, or anywhere that we just kind of stumbled on ourselves was really amazing. In terms of food, we found some really cool little bars and things, and coffee everywhere was amazing. So yeah, good little getaway, really, really beautiful landscape, and yeah, so that was our little mini break. Then we came back and now we're off to Japan in a couple months. And that's with me.
How was the Lord of the Rings thing? Because like, I really want to do it, but I'm scared that like, I'm going to get there and start crying because I like, there's so much emotional attachment to the Lord of the Rings.
Oh my god, I thought I would too, but it was, I think because like, I don't know, maybe because it's been a few years. If I was like teenage Tegan, I think I would have lost my shit. Like there's a photo of me like in a like Lord of the Rings style cape with a sword standing in the exact spot where the Orlando Bloom like original promo shots were. And I could almost feel like my little Tegan, oh my god, it was like, he stood here 15 years ago, calm the fuck down. No, it was just cool. I think... I mean, I'm a huge, huge Lord of the Rings fan, but I think I ended up appreciating more just being able to, like, go to the scenery, like, going on top of Mount Victoria, being able to walk around and, like, the amazing scenery there. It was really lovely going out to where Rivendell was shot. I think the best thing was going to the Weta Cave and getting to see all the cool behind-the-scenes stuff because they actually get one of the artists to show you around.
Mm.
So, like, they know what they're talking about. And I think... thing that really got me, and you saw it everywhere, like not just on the tour, is just how much of an impact that Peter Jackson has had on that town. Like, you know, obviously as a kid it's hard enough to have a dream to be like, as a little New Zealand boy, to like make it big in Hollywood, but usually even if someone had that drive they'd go and do it, but instead he actually built it there. And you know, he, even when he was still making his first movies, he still lived on the shittest block, like in the industrial area of Wellington, and instead of like taking his talent somewhere else, he built it up. He like owns half the town. He owns all this property where he rents it to residents super, super cheap, on the caveat that if he has to have like actors come in and say that, they have to be out within 48 hours or something, but still super cheap. Every museum we went to had some sort of Weta influence in some sort of way. So he's just really super given back to the community, which is really cool. I'm a huge World War II nerd, so we went to the war memorial there, and there's this beautiful World War I exhibit that had all been done by Weta. So yeah, I think I probably took that away from the tour more than anything, just falling in love with the nature and just how much impact one person can have. I really liked that. Next, what else do we have on the agenda? I guess video games, that thing this whole podcast is about.
At some point, we should probably talk
about it. Yeah, looking at the run sheet, and the next subtitle is games.
What has everyone been playing lately? I've been playing Horizon because I've had it for 2 weeks because I'm a jerk.
Oh, journalist.
I've had it for 24 hours. I started playing it at midnight and haven't really stopped much since then.
I've had it for all of 10 minutes, thanks to Tegan.
Yay. I really fucking dig it. I'm not as far into it as I'd like to be at the moment. It's because, you know, it's life. But one thing that we were talking about before the podcast is that we were all a little bit worried that it was going to just be Far Cry Primal with, like, robots. Mm. And it's definitely not that at all. Like, obviously, there are robots and there's archery, but it doesn't feel like anything's being ripped off or anything like that. It's just, I don't even know how to describe it. I think that it just got me emotionally really fast. And I actually said this in a little rap thing that we did for Kotaku of everyone's kind of first impressions, that the second that it got me, and this isn't spoilery or anything, but in the tutorial where you're a young child, Alloy, there's this bit where she comes across a hologram, never seen that before, obviously. And she's maybe like 8 years old or 6 years old or something. And she just sees this thing, like, you know, talking like about his son's birthday or whatever. And you see her just bewildered by it. And then she replays it immediately. And when the hologram's like, hi, she's like, hi. Like, she's just this perfect child response to it. It's exactly what a kid would do. It was so real. And I was in.
Yeah.
Such a small detail. And I think that's why I've fallen in love with it. It's, you know, crafting system is great in that it's so streamlined. You know, the RPG element is great because it's so streamlined. That's all fantastic. Fighting's fantastic. It looks beautiful. But what got me was just that they paid really close attention to the finer details.
It's the first thing that is usually neglected in video games is the writing. It's just dialogue and the writing. And it's all of those things that you said. And I had exactly the same reaction when I was playing that at about 1 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
And when she starts talking back to it.
Yeah.
And it was just the most natural thing.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that what I think this game manages to do is... there are other games with great writing. There's games like Firewatch that has fantastic writing and Bioshock.
Literally anything by BioWare.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So there's a lot of games with good writing. But what Guerrilla Games have managed to do with this is the technology is so good and the facial animation is so good and the production value is so huge that, like they say about, I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but they said that, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And that's exactly what they've done here.
Yeah.
That if the tech is that good, and the visual quality of what you're seeing is that good, you would, in your mind, you're not watching a video game. You're just watching a story.
Yeah.
And then if you connect that with good writing, you have something extraordinary. So that's really what I've taken away from it more than anything else, is mechanically all that stuff is beautiful and smooth, and like it's Blizzard level smooth in terms of all of the mechanics. But whenever it slips into a cutscene, you've got good writing, you've got good voice acting, and you have incredible, like, the visual fidelity of the facial animation and all that kind of stuff is so good that you really buy into it more so than kind of any other game. There've been games with great writing but crap technology.
Yeah.
There've been games with amazing technology but crap writing.
Yeah.
So, you know, not naming any names, but this one actually just seems to have done both, and it kind of... It's like those things, whenever you've played an open world game, specifically open world games, because they have to make compromises left, right, and center, right?
Yeah.
And you play it and you go, this would be perfect. All it needs is, you know, better graphics, or it needs better writing, or it needs blah, blah, blah. This seems to be ticking all the boxes. It just...
Definitely.
There's no compromise in this.
Yeah, and again, I think we're talking about this beforehand, like, why, especially in 2017, did they send out some review copies so early? And I think it's because they had that confidence, because they could. And as soon as I started playing, I could see why. I'm like, wow, this was a cocky move. And well played, like, definitely. I don't even really know what else to say about it, just that I'm in love with it. And they also, like... Didn't make it be like, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, you've got a female protagonist, and it's something that people talk about a lot. But what I really liked about it is that they actually haven't made a big deal about it in the marketing as well, which I think is one of the most smartest and also most feminist things that you can actually do as well. Like, don't, like,
you don't want to be tokenistic. You don't want to. Hey, look, it's like we have a lady, like fuck you, Ubisoft. Like, we can have a woman as, like, our title character.
Yeah. And it actually makes me happy after, like, you know, I think it was at E3 2 years back when head of Sony actually said something that really fucked me off at the time when they first introduced, like, Horizon. And they're like, oh, we're really, like, a little bit nervous about what's going to happen about having a female protagonist. I'm like, how about being nervous about the fact that you've got a studio that's never done a fucking RPG before, like, especially open world. And, like, obviously they've killed it, but I'm glad that they've, since then, not actually made it about gender.
I agree.
It's been great.
It's obviously, it's hard for me to comment on, you know, these sorts of, you know, issues around feminism and all that sort of stuff, but I'm hugely impressed with the fact that, exactly as you say, that it is not a game that tries, that wears it on its sleeve like a badge. It's just like, no, this is the story we wanted to tell.
It normalizes it, which is what we need. Yeah, it's important. Yeah.
And the best part about it is that some of my more bro friends who've picked it up and started playing it today, and these are people who would be the first ones to say, look, I'd love to play Tomb Raider, but I can't identify with a female protagonist.
Yeah. You know?
And a lot of guys, I mean, I don't know if your guy friends say this, but I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
But there's like, I can't play that because, you know, you have to play as a girl. I'm not going to play as a girl.
Yeah.
You know, ignoring the fact that women gamers spend 90% of their time having to play as guys, right? But none of them have said that. They just love the game. They love the story. You know, she's a person, not a female protagonist. And I'm really impressed with that.
It's really cool. Even down to, like, going back to the writing and everything as well. Again, this won't have any spoilers, but there's characters that you'll come across probably in your first 5 hours, depending how you're playing it, who, even ones that, like, you don't see for very long, who you'll get an attachment to awfully fast, or you'll have feelings about awfully fast, whether it's, you know, negative or positive ones. It, you know, quite literally gets you right in the feels really quickly, and that's impressive. You know, you want to know more about them, or, you know, if something happens, you're devastated. Like, it's awesome.
I really think it's that 1-2 punch of writing and production values.
Yeah.
Because I remember playing something like Skyrim, or playing, you know, any of those sorts of games, and you would sometimes have really, really nice story ideas and nice characters and all that kind of stuff. But at some point, the immersion is broken because they kind of look like stick people. You know? and they have that kind of Bethesda stone face, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, this is true, yeah.
Even the same thing happens in Fallout. You know, you have good writing and you're going, yeah, but look at this guy. He looks like a potato, you know.
Yeah.
So that's just not the case in this one. And it's all in the eyes and, you know, it's hard to describe because I'm only slightly into it, but it's fantastic.
It is. So I'd have to say, like, as much as people are hyping it, I think it's worth the hype. Like, frankly, I really do. So far, like, you know, maybe it'll wear on me eventually once I, you know, get 40 hours in, but I honestly don't think it will. I'm loving every second of it. Other things this week. So, Alex and I got our hands on a Switch yesterday, which launches on Friday. So, I haven't had a whole lot of time with it yet, but, it's interesting so far. I guess my first question before I kind of give my very preliminary thoughts would be, are you guys excited for the Switch at all?
Like, I think what I've previously mentioned is I think it looks really nice and it would look really nice on a coffee table. I am totally not interested in it. Because, like, for me, it just looks like an iPad with, like, two plastic things, like, shoved on the side, like, kind of, like, Fisher-Pricey type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, there's not really any games that I'd want to play on it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't really care about Zelda.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like I like grew out of Mario, like, after I turned 8 years old.
grew out of Mario.
Sorry.
Did you ever play Galaxy?
Fake gamer girl. No, I never did.
Galaxy was great though. I think you might actually like that. Yeah. It's cool.
I don't have an option about whether to be excited about the Switch or not.
Because, you have two sons.
Because I have two young boys who I have raised on Nintendo. So
you've raised them on everything, to be fair. You raised them on Dark Souls, yeah.
When the Nintendo games run out, and, you know, that's because Nintendo's release schedule is so slow. I had to sub it with something. They're hugely excited about the Switch coming out on Friday.
Yeah.
It's especially exciting for Josh because Friday is an exciting day anyway because he's just started school, which means it's the weekend, so it's a big deal for him. So,
actually, I loved Josh's reaction to when I came in today. I'm like, hey, Josh, I've got, like, the Switch at home and stuff. And I think when he realized that he wasn't here,
that's right,
he's just like, okay, like, yeah, the shit.
I think that was also a bit of family loyalty. He was like, no, the Switch will come home when Daddy brings it home.
Oh my God, you're the provider.
But, I'm excited about it because I never grew out of Mario, unlike Lee. So, the new Zelda fantastic. The new Super Mario apparently will be this year, though, you know, who knows? It'll probably be delayed. Look, I don't think it's going to be a success. I just don't.
You don't? Why?
Because
price point.
Nintendo's not very good at success. They haven't been good at it for a lot of years. Mm. And the thing is, Nintendo is very much the Apple of the console generation in the sense that they innovate relentlessly, regardless of whether people will actually care or not. And because Apple still is kind of clinging on to what's cool, you know, very slightly, people will still, you know, slavishly buy, you know, whatever Apple shovels out. People aren't really doing that with Nintendo, as evidenced with the Wii U, you know, which was financially speaking a disaster.
Yeah.
Even though some fantastic games came out for it. They're pretty much, Nintendo is really on their own trip, very much on their own trip. They kind of come up with this stuff. They go, we think it's brilliant. And people are like, do you? Okay, wonderful. I like the idea of a portable console, which is a portable console as opposed to, you know, like a Game Boy or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just can't see that being the thing that turns it into a success. And again, it's under spec, you know, so things, nothing's going to look quite as good or as smooth. So they definitely can't play in the...
You can play Skyrim on it.
Yeah, you can play a 10-year-old game on it. Fine.
Good.
It can't compete with the CodBro space. It can't compete with the kind of production value that you're going to get from a PS Pro or Xbox Scorpio, whatever the fuck that thing's going to be called. So what exactly is it, you know? And when you're, if you're an Apple customer, you go, well, it's an iPhone. That's what it is. And that's why I have it. So the brand loyalty is strong enough that they'll sit there and they go, fuck you, better specs. I've got an iPhone. You know what I mean? Nintendo doesn't really have that, even though they believe they do. And they operate on the assumption that they do. Because Mario, because Zelda.
You know? I have a feeling that, like, for them, it's like they're kind of more focused on the Japanese market, which is where the bulk of their sales comes from, because there is a strong loyalty to the brand over there. And I guess, like, outside of it, probably anything goes.
Really. Yeah, but I think even in Japan, the Wii U was kind of a flop. Mm. And you know, especially next to the PlayStation. I don't think anyone in Japan buys an Xbox, right? Like, they don't really care much about it.
Probably not,
right?
No.
But yeah, so look, I don't think it's going to be a success, but at the end of the day, any old new console, I'll probably buy it just to get into it and see what it's like.
Yeah. I've had a little bit of time of it, like, honestly, like, not enough. But so far, I don't know. I don't know if I'm entirely convinced it's something that I'll need. Like, I mean, Alex even said today, hey, like, maybe, you know, if we keep this one, maybe we'll get a second one. I'm like, and I straight away just said, I'm not spending an extra $500 for a second one of these. Like, yes, it would be kind of cool. At least not yet. Mm. You know, yes, it'd be cool if we get to play some two-player stuff together. But the stuff that we've seen so far is all, like, party game kind of stuff. Great for a party, super fun, but...
When you've got Steam, why bother?
Yeah, exactly. I'm there going, I can't see Alex and I sitting down to do that. And there's other things I want to spend $500 on. So you're playing it... I feel like the bulkiness of it actually would bother me. Like, I don't know if I could be fucked, honestly, taking it on a
so is it,
on a train.
Is it a bit too bulky to, like, slip into your handbag or stuff?
Yeah, it'll fit, but it's still, like, I don't want to be sitting... I know it's a podcast, no one can see what I'm doing, but, like, where my hands are apart, I don't really want to be having my hands that far apart.
It's that far?
You know, it's pretty big, like, you know, especially if you have the Joy-Cons on there, right?
Yeah.
I think that also might be because I'm used to my DS as well, my 3DS, which I quite like, because, you know, it's small and, you know, it's subtle. You know, we felt, you know, also because it wasn't out yet, when we went out to test it outside and things like yesterday, you felt quite conspicuous with it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we'll see. The Joy-Cons are kind of cool how they slip off. I also feel like they're quite fragile. I feel like there's going to be quite a few breakages, like, in the first week.
Because they're not cheap either.
No, they're not.
They're like retailing at like $70, I think.
Yeah. So
that's pretty crazy. It's not a cheap console.
It's not. I also found that with the kickstand, so if you want to kind of have it just sitting up on your desk, a bit of a weird angle. I didn't feel like it was that comfortable. We also found it was pretty glary outside. But again, I didn't spend a whole lot of time with it. It was kind of weirding me out, especially when you take the Joy-Cons off, that obviously the thumbsticks are in different positions. Like, obviously they kind of have to be. That was a little weird. I didn't really play through a lot of Zelda yet. It looks beautiful. Like, it does. The graphics look really nice.
I think it's interesting in a way that something like Zero Dawn and something like Zelda is being released kind of a week in between.
Yeah.
And they're both kind of technically open worlders. And it's one of these things where you look at Zelda and you go, okay, it's an abstract impressionistic thing and isn't it beautiful? And then you put Zero Dawn and you go, actually, no, that really is beautiful.
Yeah.
And so it shatters that kind of, you know, little microcosm of being in Nintendo land that like, oh, it's the new Zelda and it's fantastic. It's like you were saying, you've grown, like Lee was saying, you've kind of grown out of it.
Yeah. Well,
What's next for Nintendo? You can't just keep remaking Zelda endlessly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I mean, I'm similar to Lee. Like, I wasn't brought up on it, so I never particularly cared. I know that there's been other people out there who have already gotten their hands on the Switch who also weren't brought up on Zelda, who have loved the new one. You know, which is great. I'm sure it could be a good entry level thing. I just don't know if I care enough.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to wait to see what more games come out on it.
Mm.
But I mean, like Lee said, there's Steam. I also have PlayStation, I also have Xbox. Like, most things that I want to play,
yeah,
I'm going to be on them, and I don't really need it for my career, but it also might just not be aimed at me.
Yeah, so it's like JB Hi-Fi actually had a competition on their Facebook, like, where you can win a Nintendo Switch, and it was like, in 25 words or less, tell us like what classic games you would like to see on the Switch. And I'm thinking about it, I'm just like, none.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think what I would be most excited for are the old games, in which case that's not good if I'm more excited for old games on something that's going to cost me $500.
Which I can play like on Steam.
Totally.
Because I'm like, I would like to play Castlevania, but I can buy that on Steam. I can buy it on an Xbox Live Arcade.
Or on the previous Nintendo console that you bought. That's the other thing. Again, it's that Apple mentality of...
Yeah.
The new one comes out. Why are you buying it? Because it's the new one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Nintendo, like Apple, are basically cults in a way, is that you sign into it. You go, okay, I'm part of your cult, which means every 2 or 3 years, we're going to pay $500 to basically do the same thing again.
Yeah.
Same franchises, same Zelda. You know, I've never known a company that urgently needs new IP more than Nintendo. It really does.
Yeah.
Because the only new IP that we saw in that Switch lineup, again, seemed to be kind of party games, which aren't really going to... They're not going to be a killer app that sells the system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Like, it is all the same franchises. And yeah, like $500 doesn't bother me. That's fine. I have a job. Like, that's fine. But if it's something that I'm excited for, I'll throw money at it. But I'm just not excited enough.
Yeah.
For this at all.
Go on holiday instead.
Yeah. No. Right. I mean, maybe I'll find that I'm proved wrong. Like, I'm in that happy position that I get to try it without having to drop $500, which is which I know is a very privileged position to be in. But I guess we'll see. Like, you know, maybe it'll prove me wrong, but I just don't see it.
I think my kids are going to love it, but it will not be a success. Like, as a console, it won't, because you're looking at it, and like the original Wii was a success because when it came out, it literally had something no one
had done before.
It had motion
controls.
This has none of that.
Yeah.
This has none of that. It just has a bunch of kind of old stuff and controllers that detach.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Mm, pretty much.
Rick, did you want to talk about
games
or anything?
We've been playing other games.
Well, there's two that
As in like Asian Ninja Geralt.
Nioh is kind of Samurai Dark Souls. I've gone through that sort of Dark Souls conversation enough times. I probably don't need to go into it. It's good. It's good. It's the combat is better than Dark Souls. It's actually got better combat, but level design isn't as good and all that kind of stuff. But it's fun. It's interesting. The two things I've done recently, games I've played recently that are interesting, one is Abzu, which has been out for a while, but it's a kind of underwater adventure game.
Mm.
Very much in the style of Journey, except underwater. So it's a kind of... there's no dialogue, there are no characters as such, you just kind of go on this kind of journey underwater. And the only reason why I'd mention it is that if you're playing it on a big 4K screen, it's absolutely jaw-dropping. There's something about, it's that whole thing that indie games do better than anything else, is that if you have a concept of like, I'm going to create an abstract underwater adventure game. So it doesn't need to have, you know, upgrade systems, and it doesn't need to have all the other things that kind of AAA games do. They can just focus 100% on that kind of narrow experience that they want to do. It's freaking amazing. You play through it in about an hour and a half, and the music is extraordinary. It's evocative. It's, you know, it's poetic. It's amazing. And it's, I don't know, $20 or something, but I hugely recommend Abzu. It literally only takes you an hour or so to play, but it's unforgettable the way that Journey was. The other thing I've discovered is just a cute little thing for any of the parents out there. There is a thing called the Cubetto, And it's literally a little game or a little system that can teach pre-literate kids how to code, the fundamentals of coding.
Oh, that's sick.
So it's, what it is it's a board. It's all made of wood. And it was a Kickstarter thing. Like, I think about a year and a half ago, it was Kickstarter, but you can order it now from Australia and it comes really quickly. And what you have is a little robot on wheels, which is a little cube, like a cute little thing like that. Then you have a mat that you lay out on the floor, which has all kinds of, like, it's a grid of different things, like a kind of map, an adventure map. Then you have a board and you have these little plastic clips, and those clips represent things like move forward, turn right, turn left, back up, all that kind of stuff. So each one represents one command.
Yeah.
And then you lay it out in a sequence. And so you have like a little adventure thing where saying on that mat I was talking about, you have to get from the castle to the river.
Yeah.
And so the kid can look at it and go, all right, well, that's three squares across and two squares up and then one to the right. And then he builds basically a simple computer program using these little plastic clips and puts it in and then just presses the button and the little robot actually moves on the map. Oh,
that's so cool.
And the concept is so simple, but kids get it. And it teaches them that sort of idea of process and logic and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They don't need to read anything. They don't need to, you know, understand language or anything like that. So it's called Cubetto, and it's made by a company called Primo, and it's really, really cool. And the kids love it.
That's super exciting.
So, yeah.
My only other thing that I've been playing is I finally got onto the Gwent like closed beta. So I had applied for it ages ago and then hadn't realized that like a good month or so ago I'd gotten accepted in, but it went into my junk mail and I raged over that. Wasn't happy, but I've been playing that a little bit and of course got addicted immediately. I feel like they've really done a good job at expanding out the game, obviously, because they had to, they couldn't keep it as simple as it was. And I may have already spent like $20 on getting cards to all my decks. Yeah, look, don't look at me.
Jeez.
I love it. It's so good.
So it's a closed beta, but the in-app purchases work.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Of course they do. They need monies. Look, they deserve my money. It's okay. Project Red and I love them. And I'm a little bit like low key.
So you buy them as like random packs and then you open them and see.
Pretty much. It's just like, you know, Magic Gathering. Exactly. But they're like barrels and it's animated and it's fun. Like, cause they give you some free to start with. That's how they get you.
It's the flashy animations and like the coin dropping ding, ding, sound.
Ding. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm basically playing.
It's like a
poker slot.
It's a poker machine.
Basically, that's pretty accurate. Now that I think about it, I'm a little bit horrified at my behavior, but it's so good. You see them like, you always get one that's like a rare and stuff. Don't sign
shiny.
That's right. So each pack, it does that thing where they go, each pack you were guaranteed at least one rare card.
Yeah.
And then three other, like, and then like
some
trash.
Basic, it's like, oh good, I got another fucking soldier or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Look, oh God!
I made some choices.
It's like you've shifted that kind of, like, you know, like you can do that sort of stuff in Destiny when you're like decrypting. It's like you've like shifted that obsession over to Gwent.
Oh yeah, just so hard, like so much so.
Wow.
Yep. That is accurate. That is a truth.
Have you been buying loot boxes in Overwatch?
No,
well?
I've never done that. I've never bought a single loot box in Overwatch. Another thing I've been playing obsessively. Now that I'm into FPS and I love it. And D.Va is the best, and that's all I have to say about it. Lee.
I think last podcast I was saying that I was playing Beyond Two Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I played Heavy Rain.
Okay.
And wow, that's like really deep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Heavy Rain is much better.
It is really intense. Have you played it?
I haven't. No.
Oh crap, so I can't sort of spoilerize it or anything.
Do you want me to leave the room? I'm not even fucking around. I'll leave the room if it's important to talk about.
No, but are you actually going to play Heavy Rain?
Yeah, I've always meant to play it. Just give me a second.
No, don't need to leave the room.
I want to make it's going to be dramatic now. You can hear me and my heels walking out of the room. Who were talking about you at Heavy Rain?
Okay.
Do you actually have anything to say about
it? I
kind of
do. It's just like, because I finished the game, whatever. I got my endings for all my characters. And then I went online because like apparently it's like, 40 like different combinations of endings.
Oh, right. Okay.
Something to, I was just like reading how it pans out and it just gets so dark because like I'm pretty thorough when I play games. So I got like all the good endings for all the characters.
Yeah.
And then like I actually read like what some of the other endings were and they're so fucked up. It's like half of them end up like with everybody dead. Main protagonist like commits suicide in like two of his endings out of like his four endings.
I only played through it once and I think I got the reasonably good ending.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like if I got like these sorts of endings, I'd be like, oh, I'd be devastated.
Yeah, it's rough. I know that I could never play through it again because it begins with him losing his child. Yeah. And the first time I played Heavy Rain, I didn't have kids. I have kids now. There's no fucking way I can play through that.
And especially
that.
Because he has two kids. as well, would be like a very...
There's just no way. Because I remember some reviewer writing about it when it came out, saying, and he was a father, saying that this is an incredibly harrowing game to play through if you've got kids. Yeah. And I was sitting there going, but now, no way. Mm. I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
You can come back in now.
Well, and aside from that, like, I started up two new Destiny characters, which is probably going to be redondant with Activision, like, being adamant that Destiny 2 is going to come out in Q3 and not Q4 or, like, next year as originally anticipated.
Yeah.
And apparently it's a bit up in the air as to whether or not your characters roll over and stuff.
Yeah,
so
I'm concerned. I have
I doubt
concerns.
They will. I doubt they will. I mean, how do they build? How do they build progression from scratch again?
And their insistence that
they'll just give you some crappy badge or something if you've got a character.
And they're insistent that, like, there's going to be some story this time. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Bungie and story, not famous for their story.
Oh, that, and also Nolan North, he's going to be at Supernova, but freaking Supernova Gold Coast in Melbourne. So I'm a bit bummed out about that, because I'm like, that would have been really awesome to like.
When are they on? Should we just go?
I don't think I can bother going to the Gold Coast, though.
Yeah, no, Gold Coast can, like, eat a fat one.
Because, and I think, like, Data is going to be at, like, freaking Adelaide Oz Comic Con. I'm like, why?
Why Adelaide? Why? I know, I was very upset about that.
And I was like, I'm just waiting for, like, the Sydney announcers to be, like, absolutely lackluster, like usual.
Sure. Speaking of things that are happening in Sydney, a bit of a cool thing that we're getting involved in on the 8th of April, I believe it is,
yep.
Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So the Australian Gaming Podcasting Network, which we are a part of and I am now an event organiser for, we're doing a big, like, podcast showdown. So basically a bunch of our local gaming podcasts, we're all going to get together at Spawn Point and play Super Fight against each other. So, for example, you might see Sasavec versus like Young from Game Hugs. And it should be super fun. So I think there is a Facebook
event
floating around. So if you look up the AGPN Super Fight, you should come along, because I reckon it's going to be super fun. We're also going to be streaming it live on Twitch. So once we have all of the links for that, we will send that out. So that's going to be super fun.
I completely realised that we forgot to... sort of preface our episode with we just turned one.
Oh my god,
so
yes,
it is the birthday extravaganza episode.
Well, it basically means that we just threw our readers a surprise party by not telling them about it until now. And so that's the way that I will justify us forgetting to say that this is a birthday episode. We'll go with that. Happy birthday, Sasava.
Yes.
Yay. Agenda
questions, I think.
Oh, good. Okay,
like, we actually got some questions, because we're trying to get people to make them birthday themed, and
they didn't.
Did we get any?
We did. Maddie, like, after we made our announcement that it was our first birthday, she was like, shit, that went quick. I don't think I've ever submitted a question. My question is, what qualities make up a great party theme, including fancy dress considerations? And also she says, I would also like to take this opportunity to do anything, in air quotes, and claim acknowledgement. I'll go one step further and give you a birthday present. An old ticket for a movie I saw a few weeks ago. Beat that, listeners.
I don't think anyone can.
And she's got a screenshot and...
Oh, she sent proof.
Yep.
I don't even know what... It doesn't even say what movie it's for, though.
Well,
it could really be anything.
Well, Maddie, you're on thin ice.
We're in cinema 2 and the seat was 013.
Okay, well...
Good old 013.
Maddie, for now, we did say you literally had to do nothing, so you will get acknowledged, but I feel like you've got until next week to tell us what movie it was.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, someone may dethrone you. So, to answer Maddie's question, though, I would have to say, in terms of, like, it was a great party theme, right?
Yeah, I'm like a... When it comes to, like, fancy dress, I get really annoyed if people don't come in theme and I specify a theme.
Yes.
I'm just like, look, even if you wore, like, a hat or something that was in theme, I would be okay. But if you show up in, like, your regular Joe clothes, I'm like, no.
And this is where, like, that actually leads into my point. It's very disrespectful. And that leads into my point where I feel like, especially if it's a house party, I think making the theme fun, but also like simple enough that people won't just end up ditching out.
Exactly.
It's good. So something that's versatile. So you'll get the ones who love to fucking dress up, they'll go all out, but someone that may be short on time or something can still find something as well. So then we don't end up getting pissed off.
Yeah, because I think one of the themes that I really do not like is when people are like, oh, I'm having a birthday and the theme is the first letter of my name. And it's like...
That shit. Be creative, firstly. But yeah, I'd say keep it like pretty simple so people can still... I do it. I feel like also putting like the food around the theme is fun.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it, everyone loves food. Yep. Everyone loves themes. Well, that's not true, but I love themes and I'm everyone. So yeah, I think that's always good things to go into a party. I think the one exception was actually, and we're going to talk about birthday parties and stuff later, was my 21st. So we actually had it, like we rented a place and I love a themed birthday. So I went with, what was it? Dead and Famous. So you had to come with someone who was both dead and famous.
That's kind of awesome.
And it worked out really well. It was one of those golden times where literally every single person dressed up and like dressed to the nines. I'm talking people like renting costumes and stuff. And it was right after like Steve Irwin and Saddam Hussein had died. And then I got Steve Irwin and I got a Saddam Hussein. And I went as Mata Hari. And so this picture of me in like, you know, the Indian style, like Mata Hari get up with the Saddam Hussein, like, rubber head that exists in nature somewhere, so I'll have to go and find it. So yeah, sometimes it can happen. I'd say that's one of my best birthdays where literally everyone dressed up, including my nan, because it's one of those ones where I had friends and family, and nan dressed up as like Queen Elizabeth II, and it was the best.
Nice.
So yeah, any other considerations? What makes a good theme party, guys?
I don't know. I think we pretty much like sort of covered that.
Great.
Like, make it a theme that's like broad enough to get the people who aren't keen on dressing up to kind of participate.
Yeah. Like, anything to add, Rick?
No, I was going to say, yeah, it just has to be achievable.
Yeah.
It has to be something that respects people's time and budget and various other things, and something that won't make them too embarrassed if they're coming in on the train and have to be in that theme.
Yeah.
I've but, never had that
problem, but I've got no shame.
What, so, just never being embarrassed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
All right, so next question.
So next question I received was from Brad, and he like slid into my DMs. So I'm not actually sure if it was supposed to be for the podcast, but...
Well, this is the game that he played, and so that's on him.
Here's Brad from Respawn Ninja. So he asks, why aren't I Twitter famous yet? I should be.
Have good tweets, Brad.
Yeah.
No, I think Brad does have some good tweets sometimes, so I'm at a loss, because Brad, you're a national treasure. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you're not Twitter famous yet. I'm sorry. Do you have any ideas of why he might not be famous yet, Lee?
No.
Does he have pride? Is like
no, there... God, no. No. And I don't say that's a bad thing. Like, he doesn't have pride.
Wow.
He doesn't care. So would you have some suggestions, perhaps, Rick, of how
I was just saying, well, I was just going to say have less pride. But if he has none, then, you know.
Have less somehow.
Yeah, have less than none. Go into negative pride, Brad.
Negative pride.
I don't know. Brad always entertains me. I follow the guy. I don't understand why he's not
maybe
famous.
Be controversial.
Start pissing people off.
Yeah, start pissing people off.
But like, don't...
Because you'll be infamous.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of a version of famous.
It's true. I have never
I've
never seen an offensive or divisive tweet from Brad. And I think that's a failing that needs to be addressed.
Sometimes he throws a couple out there.
Does he?
But, yeah.
They all seem to be kind of nice, observational, funny things. But he's not actually shitting anyone off, which is clearly paramount.
Piss shit poster.
Piss people off.
Yeah, but like, you need to ride the line. You don't want to get like permabanned. You don't want to be Milo.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You just have to kind of ride that Milo wave just before it breaks.
Can we like please not like? Is
that the name?
The
episode?
The Milo wave.
No, oh my god!
All our listeners now.
Oh my god! Can we please not make Sassafec advocating being like Milo? Can we not make that a thing, please?
Okay.
Riding the Milo wave is a heaps good fucking like name though. We're talking about the drink Milo.
He's ruined the actual Milo drink for everybody.
He's
now,
ruined
though.
Australia.
Because like when I see, I'm just like, I think of Milo as the drink, and but it's not. It's like this douchebag.
He's such a dick, and he's ruined my childhood. Basically, I feel personally victimized.
It's like I did prefer Ovaltine anyway, but
Milo. Ovaltine's incorrect.
Yeah.
No, it is correct.
It's incorrect. It's grainy and it's weird. Like
it's got so much more flavor.
Milo is powder. You want powder in your milk?
No,
like,
but with Ovaltine, it's so good when it gets to like the really chunky bits that clump together, and then you crunch into
just
them.
Watching us fight over this, waiting
this
like.
So good! I literally have a bowl of chips.
Yeah,
too.
It's like you're either gonna weigh in or you're gonna be Switzerland on this whole thing.
It's like, no, I like Nesquik.
Oh God, yes.
Look, let's not go crazy. Like, anyone who preferred like the strawberry quick,
no,
yeah,
get the fuck out.
No.
No,
I think strawberry milk in general is just gross.
Yeah. So.
Well, I don't know. Like, I know I'm not a big fan of strawberry milk, okay, but good. You know, I grew up with people who did like strawberry milk quite a lot, and they used to just call it pink milk. That's just what it was called.
It tastes like pink.
It tastes like.
It does. It tastes like pink. It doesn't resemble strawberry in any way.
God. All right. Do we have any other questions?
No, not that I'm aware of.
We're bringing in the quality this week. What's next on our agenda? I think we're talking about birthday things, weren't we? Happy birthday, Sasabe.
I'm trying to get back to the run sheet.
That's
now.
All right. We're on with that. Literally, I'm the run sheet now. Okay. So I guess, Sass Effect is one now, which is exciting.
Mm.
So I thought it might be fun to maybe discuss if there's ever been any horrific birthdays that any of us have ever had, like worst birthdays ever, but maybe best birthdays would perhaps be better. But I want to hear like your horror stories if you have them.
I haven't really had horror stories. It's kind of more like you kind of get to a point where it's like, for me, I've never really given a shit about my birthday anyway, mostly because it's like when I try and organize something, there's no point because like half or like a third of the people you invite show up, and then it's just disappointing.
And then building a costume.
And I'm like, I'd rather just like sort of invite like three people that I know will attend my birthday.
But isn't that a good thing? Because in a way, it's like a filter, right? So you sit there and you invite a whole bunch of people to your birthday, and the people who are worth something and the people who give a shit, they turn up.
No, but see, one year, it's like I decided to organize karaoke for my birthday.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. And I'm just like, look, give your RSVP so I know like what to tell, like numbers and things like that.
Mm.
So that was okay because like I invited 20. I think like 12 were like, yes, I'll come along. And I'm like, okay, I'll book it for 12. And those 12 people showed up. But you had like a few, like if like half the people were like really awesome, like were really into it.
Mm.
And then you had half the people who like were just sort of sitting there watching everyone else sing. And it's like, it's fucking karaoke. You're killing the vibe.
I find that's true of almost any karaoke.
And it's like, I would rather them have not shown up if they weren't going to get into the spirit.
They were harshing her buzz.
Of the party.
Did you get up like halfway through, you know?
Can you leave?
Halfway through, I like to move it. You're like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Oh no, it's like, I was just like really into like seeing Hold the Line and stuff.
Okay, which is good. That's great.
It was actually funny bringing up karaoke. Like today I won't say which client, but I had to go into a client meeting while we were pitching some stuff. And literally like, the first thing that I walked in, they're like, you know, my publisher and one of the sales guys have met this person before. I've never met this person. The first thing is like, oh, we'll have to get you to karaoke. What's your karaoke song? That's like the first thing this guy asked me. I'm just like, I don't think you want me to answer that. And he's like, no, come on. I'm like, I've just met this person. I'm like, so I don't know how they're going to react because, you know, everyone knows what this song is about. I'm like,
I think I know the answer to this.
I'm like, I touched myself. Luckily, they cool and it was fine. And they thought that was very funny. And like, there was no embarrassment in the room. And I'm like, shit.
I like how you felt you had no option to kind of just choose a more placid song and lie in the client meeting, that you had to tell the total horrible truth.
I went
truth.
Blank. Like, and I'm thinking, but I also felt like this is like, you know, make it or break it time.
You could
like,
have said anything. You could have said Africa. You could have like,
yeah,
you know,
I could have, but I certainly did not. I Tegan the shit out of that situation.
Did.
And you know what? I came out on top.
That's
so it was
right.
All right.
That's right. You do you.
Speaking of what legal is about, like RSVPs, this is something I'm very passionate about. And this helped happen with my birthday this year, actually. Is that I'm a passionate believer in the RSVP and the modern etiquette of the Facebook RSVP. So I get the shits. Like, if it's a house party, that's fine. You know that, like, half the people who say they confirm to it probably aren't going to show up.
Mm.
Fine, whatever. But when it's a restaurant and then you're, like, the day of, like, within an hour of, like, you arriving at the restaurant, you're still getting people going, sorry, man, like, can I come? Like, that pisses me off.
Sure.
So I think that's, like, a shitty thing, like, for people to do. Like, if you RSVP to something, fucking show up.
It's funny that you mentioned that. It's interesting because it's not just the house party mentality that they're bringing there. It's also the Facebook side of it.
Yeah, it's true. They just hit yes to anything.
Yeah, because in the days when RSVPing meant that you actually called the person on the phone.
Or you had to return the little...
The little envelope
or something.
Yeah, I don't think that... I mean, I think that's long gone. Like, that ship is sailed.
We're just showing our age.
But the whole kind of calling people or like, it's just that that level of abstraction. If it's Facebook or even if it's by text, it's still abstracted to the point where you can allow yourself not to feel too bad if you bail.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Like I say, if you've booked at a restaurant, which means you're going to get like stink eye from the fucking waiters. If you know, if you turn up and say,
you maybe cost them money though. Yeah, like, if you tell them actually it is like,
yeah, it's not just bad for you, it's bad for them. They've basically made this allowance for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's just flat out rude. There's no real justification for it. It's just rude.
Especially when you've got restaurants, because I was talking with one of my colleagues, because like his brother's having a birthday and like he wanted to like book a restaurant that's in the city that's like quite a nice restaurant. And it's like their policy is, it's like if you're booking like for a table of like 10 people or whatever, if like you cancel your booking within 24 hours of your reservation, it's like they're going to charge $500 on your card.
What?
500.
Wow.
And this isn't like Key or I or anything.
It's not even like a top shelf restaurant.
It's just a mid-range restaurant. And right. But it's like a really popular restaurant.
Maybe that's genius though, because then people aren't going to fucking
good,
do it.
Yeah. It's the same thing with like what Dimi's been doing. I don't know if you've like been reading about that, like Dimi the booking app.
No.
Where you can like book restaurants. So what they've been doing is if people have been like booking and not showing up to their booking, it's like the restaurants can blacklist the people for a year.
Right.
And you can't actually book at that restaurant for like a year.
That's awesome.
I'd support that.
And it's like they've actually blacklisted, I think, like, 33,000 people or something.
Yeah,
already?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Charging people, I don't know about that, but blacklisting, fine. Like, just sit there and say, no, we tried with you guys before, it didn't work out, so get fucked.
I like the charging thing because I think, especially if it's exorbitant, it's like you're not going to fuck around, then you're going to be damn sure.
Yeah.
Because, like, within 24 hours, it's like they might not be able to fill, it's like, a table of 10 or whatever.
That's a lot of money.
From their point of view, it's costing them money. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The charging thing is fine.
Even though you could argue that
so it's like if you're in that situation where it's like you book for 20 and 10 people show up,
you're
probably going to have to end up footing the bill for the people who hadn't showed up.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what, and also it's just rude and it's not nice.
We did.
I think Rick might have been the most hungover that he's ever been before. What did you drink,
God.
Rick?
Are we going to go there?
Let's go there. So we went to Korean barbecue.
This
and
is
it
the
was
first
delicious.
Time. First time I've ever like I've heard horror stories all through my my salad days, my early days of like, I was so hungover I couldn't get out of bed for a whole day, and I always roll my eyes and go, yeah, that doesn't actually happen. Like
I've had a two-day hangover, dude.
You get hungover for an hour, you get hungover for a couple of hours, but by about 11 o'clock in the morning, it's all good. This was not all good. this was like 5-6 o'clock at night. I was still pretty much unable to function.
Wow.
This has never happened before in my life at all. And it was borderline frightening. I'm like, what the fuck has happened? Like, you almost feel like you've been drugged or something. You cannot get out of bed.
We roofied the shit out of it. We have the photos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
it's like I blacked out. There was mixing of alcohol that night, though. Like, besides the fact that we were eating, like, just a lot of fried chicken. Like, what if you end up having...
There wasn't that much of it, though, was there?
Stuff that, you had a fair bit, and also, like, mixing stuff that you don't always have. So what did we have at the restaurant? We had soju.
Yep.
What was the wine that you got, Lee?
Oh, raspberry wine.
Raspberry wine.
Two things you've never had before.
No.
But also, soju is pretty high alcohol content.
Yeah.
Then we went to the bar.
Yeah.
And so there were a couple of rounds of tequila shots. Then whatever you were probably drinking, like vodka or
just
something.
Just vodka stuff. And then there was a lot of whiskey.
So then...
Because you and Alex got me on the whiskey.
There we go. You mixed your browns with your whites.
Was that it?
And, that's what it was. And it's you finished off one of my whiskeys.
Fucking racist.
No, but seriously, when you're drinking spirits, it's like you either stick
you
to clear spirits or you stick to brown spirits.
So that's what happened.
You never mixed both.
That must be what
happened. That's why Long Island iced teas are so dangerous. And also you finished off one of my, like nearly a full drink of mine at the restaurant. I think by then it was... either a vodka lime and soda or a lime and whiskey.
Don't know.
Then we all, like, he was drunk off his ass and decided that he had to escort Alex and I home in an Uber, despite the fact he was still living in the inner west and we're a Kogoro. Like, okay.
I did escort you home.
You did,
in an Uber.
I know. And so then he needed to go to the bathroom and then decided he needed to know what, like, whiskey tasted like. So we let him try some of the Japanese whiskey, then some gin, and then he wanted to try the whiskey again. And this is about 3 in the morning, and then he got in a cab home.
So yeah, from about 6 at night till 3 in the morning, solid drinking and mixing weird stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what did it.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like a lot at the time, but...
Like, it's not like you blacked out or anything, and like, you didn't seem like you were off your head or anything like that. Like, you seemed like this normal, happy, drunk person.
Yeah, but see, it gets to the point where this is what happened to Josh at New Year's, where it's like it's like you're fine, and all of a sudden it's just bang.
Yeah,
it was
you
just
snap
it just hits. Drops on you,
yeah.
And you just
the bee drops.
Yeah.
But see, I would have thought that would have happened when I was coming home in the cab, or when I was crawling into bed, or one of those things. But no, it happened when I woke up.
Yeah.
So everything was fine, and then I woke up.
Did you wake up
dead.
Like what? Like talk me through how you woke up. Like,
waking up was okay. Here's the thing, right? The deal was I was going out for your birthday that night. And then the next day I was going out to see a friend of Steph's, and we're going to take the kids out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that wasn't going to need to happen until about noon. So I was going,
fine.
I was saying clearly I'm going to be hungover, but I'll be over it by about 11 o'clock.
Maybe a little dusty.
Yeah, exactly. I woke up to the sound of the door slamming, and that was Steph taking the kids to this thing on her own. So she'd obviously tried to wake me up like 3 times during the morning and just took one, you know, eventually just looked at me and went, this isn't fucking
you're
happening.
You're fucked.
Yeah. She wasn't angry or anything. It was just clearly it had been a big night, and
yeah.
She was like, you're not going to be in any fucking state to do this.
Please don't go near my friends.
I could not believe that... Yeah, that I was waking up at noon, effectively,
yeah.
and couldn't move. Like, I'd try to get out of bed, and it was like, oh.
Did you wake up feeling awful, or was it when you tried to get up?
It was when I tried to get up.
Yeah,
so it's when you try and get upright, your mind, like, your head and your stomach are just like, nah, mate.
No.
Not going to fucking happen.
Yeah.
And so every time you try more to sort of make it 2 or 3 steps out, it was like a montage in one of those movies where someone gets injured and then
yeah.
has to, like, work his way back to being strong again.
Yeah, yeah.
Except
yeah.
it was just constant failure. In the movies, it slowly gets better.
Yeah.
It didn't happen that way. It was constant failure until about 5 p.m.
Yeah. Did you have that moment, or this might be more of a when you're still drinking kind of thing, but you know, like when you want to like chunder from drinking and you start getting the sweats and you're looking at yourself in the mirror going, we're going to do this.
Yep.
Like
yep.
you're going, come
yep.
on, champ.
That's right.
This doesn't need to happen.
So many mirror conversations. And, and yeah, I did. That's another
thing.
That's another thing. I've never, like hardly ever thrown up from drinking,
yeah.
but that happened.
Wow.
A number of times throughout the day.
You're so welcome. I'm glad that my birthday was the gift that it gave just to everybody.
It really was. It was special.
I think that the only other kind of crappy one that I've had, and it was like, I don't think the day itself was bad, but I had an ex who, you know, I had like, you know, I don't want to be lavish in gifts and stuff on my birthday. Like you get to a certain age, like if I want something, I'll buy it.
Mm.
Right. But you know, I had a couple of things, like he wanted some ideas. I'm like, oh, here's a couple like cheap things, like a Cthulhu mug or whatever the hell. He spent more than I wanted him to. He got me a Fitbit. Which, you know, that might not be a bad thing. I actually wouldn't mind a Fitbit now. Because he got me one because my legs were getting a bit big. That wasn't a good birthday.
If you're going to give your partner, your girlfriend, or it wouldn't matter if it was your girlfriend or boyfriend,
yeah.
if you can give them a Fitbit, you almost need to pre-qualify that.
Make sure
and
they
it,
want
to take
like,
all they
ask
for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Make sure they want
to,
if it's
yeah.
just, if it just appears on spec.
Yeah.
It's like...
Maybe you need to look at your life and your choices. Bro. Here's a Fitbit.
Exactly. Nothing says love like a Fitbit. It's like,
yeah.
Jesus, that's a terrible gift.
Yeah, so that was the thing. Who else has had bad and or amazing birthdays?
I had an amazing one.
Okay.
Just to interrupt the flow of
like
bad ones.
Misery.
Well, we've had, your one was amazing. Then we've had this new one that was bad.
Yeah.
I had a birthday. It was a surprise. The only surprise birthday I've ever had was Steph organized it, and
yeah.
it was amazing. And what happened was my parents were taking me out to dinner and they were kind of in on it.
Okay.
Right? So the idea was Steph was like, no, it's okay. Let them take you out to dinner. You know, we weren't actually living together at the time anyway.
Nice.
So my parents were taking me out to dinner. And then my dad, and this is like, he's never done this sort of thing before. He's like, let's go for a drink at the pub. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, my dad's never said anything like that.
Yeah.
He never, like, he's just, you know, he hardly ever uses the word pub.
Yeah.
And so anyway.
It is of the common people.
Yeah.
And let us go to the public house.
Yes, the public house. And drink as men do. And the thing was, Steph, I knew, well, as far as I knew,
yeah.
Steph was at home.
Yeah.
And I was going to go home to see Steph afterwards. So I'm thinking, no, I don't want to go to the fucking pub with my parents. That's not a good time.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go home and like see my girlfriend. But he was insistent. He was like, no, trust me. You want
to
go
to the public house.
Song?
It's like, no, you really want to come to the RSL.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And so he was so insistent. And even so, my suspension of disbelief, like I still didn't know something was up. I just chose, some part of my brain just switches off. Like
yeah.
any, you guys would have known at this point that
yeah.
there's, you know, but no, not me.
Yeah.
So eventually I went to the pub and I go to the pub and all of my friends are there.
That's awesome.
Steph is there. It was great. And not only had she gotten all of my kind of current bit, friends in my current social group, but she'd gone way back in time. She'd gotten almost the entire cast of Romeo and Juliet that I did in high school.
Oh my god, that's
amazing. Come to the pub. It was freaking insane.
Yeah.
So that was just an epic birthday. Like, the thing is, like, the buzz you get from that, you know, the initial sort of thing that, like, this many people gave a shit to turn up. Plus, my partner organized it all and did all the exhausting.
Yeah.
There was no Facebook back then. It would have been all phone calls and all this sort of stuff. And they all turned up, and it was just amazing.
Was this for, like, your 50th or something?
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. It was my 20th 40 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
It actually was called the Public House back then.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Very good. Anything else to add, Lee?
No, because I can't really remember like any like super outstanding birthdays. I'm like, oh, it's like, I guess my nine-year-old birthday at like Skate Plus was pretty good back in the day.
That is sounds sick. I'll do that now. That'd be so good.
That was like the very shy thing to do. It's like in the 90s, it was like Skate Plus or bowling parties.
And you play like car park wall and stuff like when you're in your skates. Yeah, that was a good time. I actually really liked your birthday last year when you literally just did the thing that you said before where like, your boyfriend and my boyfriend, you and I, just went for a really nice dinner.
Yeah.
That was awesome. It was good.
It's what happens when you get old.
Yeah, it's just like, I like these two people.
Yeah, it's like these are two people that I can tolerate for more than a couple of hours at a time. I will invite them.
Who can, like, you know, afford dinner.
Yeah.
And we'll come to the thing. I like it. That seems good. On that note, do you reckon we should get into some acknowledgements?
Okay, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so Maddie, we acknowledge you because you asked to be acknowledged, but we still want to know what movie that you've given us your ticket to.
So it's not full acknowledgement.
No.
It's
pending. Full
it's probationary acknowledgement.
Yeah, yeah. She could be knocked off her perch very easily.
Okay.
Definitely. We would also like to thank the lovely folks at Hojo Studio, which I guess is kind of here now.
Yes.
Rick, thanks for being our producer. We also acknowledge you.
Wow.
Thanks for letting us use your house and for getting us delicious snacks.
I just got acknowledged. That was brilliant.
I know. We didn't even forget it.
Oh, by the way, Inflatality was at GDC.
What? I didn't know that.
Yep.
Did we say you could plug your shit on here, mate?
No, we can cut it out if it bothers you.
Who's running it if you're here?
No, there's a showcase. There's like a little trailer.
Are you Syrian?
No. Exactly. I'm stopped at the border. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, for anyone not getting the joke there, do you want to maybe explain the joke? Who is it that's like doing this for people who aren't actually allowed into the country at the moment?
Oh no, there's a trailer that shows a bunch of Australian indie games that they're running on three big screens.
Yeah.
At Game Developers Conference, and they asked us if we wanted to submit our trailer to be in the big trailer.
Yeah.
And the first I heard of it, someone...
Oh, that was me. I told you about that.
What?
I think. About the trailer.
Oh, you told me about the trailer. Yes,
yeah,
we did. And
yeah.
We submitted it, and it got in there.
Awesome.
And Arvin, who's our developer, who's over there...
Oh, awesome.
Tweeted that, like, it was there. So that's pretty exciting.
So the joke that I was making, I can't remember which dev company is doing it, but basically, you know, for GDC, if there's anyone that wasn't allowed into America because Trump's a dick, at the moment he was they were offering to show off their games for free, essentially. So that was the joke that I was making.
Mm.
But also it's a really cool thing that they're doing. I think
it's
great.
It's terrific. A lot of creative industries are doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We acknowledge you. And it's awesome that Inflatality was up there. We would also like to thank Plantronics for being our awesome sponsors. We love you. Anyone else that we need to acknowledge, Lee? Mm-hmm. I acknowledge you, Lee.
Oh, thank you.
I don't think we've never acknowledged each other in like a year, so
that's
I acknowledge
true.
You.
I think for your first birthday, that's pretty apt.
That is pretty nice.
Okay, I acknowledge
you. I thought I was going to
be for a minute there,
and I was like,
she was going to leave me hanging.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, well, let's just wrap this up now.
I thought Lee was going to go, I accept your acknowledgement. Silence.
Oh, thanks. It's like awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd also like to acknowledge our mascot, and we're the podcast who uses mascot first, Blowjob Chicken.
We are the original and the best podcast to use the Blowjob Chicken.
If anyone's wondering, look, I'm not going to name names or anything, but you'd think that when you've been around for a year and you've used a certain mascot the entire time that...
It sort of belonged to you.
It seems a little interesting when then another podcast comes along that, you know, basically describes themselves as loose and talking about anything and being edgy and using the same chicken, which is a public thing. We also saw it in the internet, but in the gaming space have a similar kind of shtick to us and then use the same mascot and call themselves
that.
That's interesting, isn't it?
At some point, using the same mascot is where it starts getting a little bit cheeky, I think.
Yeah. So look, maybe it's just a coincidence. I'm not salty at all.
A series of coincidences.
Yeah. So, we acknowledge your existence, which basically just means we see you.
Yes. we're watching you, Blowjob Chicken Podcast.
We are. We see what you did there. We'll be watching. Until next time. Say yes to the sass.
And stay salty.